sense of the last time we had big strikes and we gave in to the department and said we'll take a weakening down of the transfer system. So when I first started teaching, you could be in a place for 3 years and you could get a transfer if you had enough points to somewhere else. And all the staffing on classroom teacher level was done that way. You might have a forced transfer if there was student number fell when then you had a guaranteed job somewhere else. Well, that's not going to happen anymore either. But you could get a compassionate transfer, you know, that sort of stuff. But basically, all classroom positions were filled from central place and everybody got it. Well, I don't know how long ago, but a few years ago, we voted to take a pay rise for our pay rise, we agreed that 50-50 jobs would be filled that way and the other 50 could be filled by interview. Well, I voted against that at the time because you can see the writing on the wall what's going to happen. Once you agree to that, you open up carte blanche because every principal and every school in the state has played the system. A lot of principals don't declare vacancies because they're scared of who they're going to get. Jobs are more than 50-50 by ad because, of course, as I said, everybody plays the system. So to me, in some ways, it's a bit hypocritical and a bit ridiculous to start fighting now when we said yes to it, you know, not that long ago. So, you know, what do you do? There's a huge number of temporary teachers already in the system, and we created that because we agreed to that, you know. So you can't have it both ways. You can't say, I want to choose my staff, but I don't want to pay for them. You know, if you're going to take the rights, well, then you have to have the responsibility that goes on with that. So, and that's true in everything that we do. Our actions have consequences. And to me, that's one of the biggest things wrong with today is we think there are no consequences to our actions, you know, and that's not right. There are consequences. And, you know, it might have been 5-10 years ago that we made a decision, but that affects our lives today, you know, and we need to be aware of that. So we're going to read Numbers 13 and 14. Moses is just about to send people in to look at the Promised Land. Remember the Israelites have been in captivity. They've had the Exodus. They've had lots of the travelling in the desert, and now the time has come for them to enter the Promised Land. Okay? So, starting from verse 1 and 13. The Lord said to Moses, send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites. From each ancestral tribe, send one of its leaders. So God's telling them to go and explore. It's not something that they shouldn't be doing, but they're going to explore the land that God is giving them. So you wonder, what attitude did they go in the first place? Did they go in with the attitude that God's going to give us this land, or did they go with a different attitude? So at the Lord's command, Moses sent them out from the desert of Paran. All of them were leaders of the Israelites. These are their names. From the tribe of Reuben, Shammon, son of Zachor. From the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat, son of Hori. From the tribe of Judah, Caleb, son of Jephunneh. From the tribe of Issachar, Igal, son of Joseph. From the tribe of Ephraim, Hosea, son of Nun. From the tribe of Benjamin, Paliti, son of Raphai. From the tribe of Zebulon, Gladliel, son of Sodi. From the tribe of Masani, a tribe of Joseph, Gadi, son of Susi. From the tribe of Dan, Amili, son of Gamili. From the tribe of Asher, Sether, son of Michael. From the tribe of Naphtali, Nahabi, son of Vossi. From the tribe of Gad, Gila, son of Maki. Aren't you glad we don't have those names anymore? These are the names of the men Moses sent to explore the land. Moses gave Hosea, son of Nun, the name Joshua. When Moses sent them to explore Canaan, he said, go through the Negev and onto the hill country. See what the land is like, whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled or fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees on it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land. It was the season for the first ripe grapes. Now, God didn't tell that. He just said to Moses, send them to explore the land. So it's very easy to take something and go, well, that means we have to do this, 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 and this. but it doesn't necessarily. God didn't tell them to bring back the grapes, but they've decided. So they went up and explored the land from the desert of Zin as far as Rehob towards Labo Hamath. They went up through Negev and came through Hebron, where Ammon, Sheshai and Telem, the descendants of the Anak, lived. Hebron had been built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. When they reached the valley of Eshcol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them, along with some pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes the Israelites cut off there. At the end of 40 days, they returned from exploring the land. 40 days is a long time to explore land. It must have been a big place. Then they came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw the descendants of Anak there, the Amalekites who lived in Negev, the Hittites, Jebusites and Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites live near the sea along the Jordan. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there. The descendants of Anak come from Nephilim. We seem like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them." So, are the Israelites going to listen to God, who said, "Let's take the land," or to these people who are saying, "No, it's too hard"? And when we were at the conference last week, we had two really great keynote speakers. The first one was a science guy, and he did all these experiments that were really cool, like the pencil one, and that was really cool. And the other one was a motivational speaker, and he was really good too, and it was all about trying to get back the energy of 4-year-olds. You say 4-year-olds don't come along and go, "Oh, this is too hard today. Oh, I don't want to go and do finger painting at preschool. It's just too hard, Mum. I just can't cope with it anymore." They just don't say that, you know. You don't get 4-year-olds who come and say that, you know. And they, if you tell them they can do something, they're just like, "Yeah, let's go," you know. And so he's talking about too, how you deal with those sorts of people in your life who are, you know, those people at work who are always negative and always thingo. And he said, people, you know, you don't come along to some, you know, you didn't come up to these Israelites and go, or these leaders who said, you know, "Oh, what's today like? Oh, I'm just trying to get the Israelites to turn against God and disobey him." Because that's not what they were thinking when they were telling people that, are they? That's not what their motive was. And that's, but what are their actions? You know? So our motives are not necessarily what our actions are. You know, you don't go up to somebody and say, "Oh, you know, how's it going? How's life?" They're going, "Oh, yeah, well, I'm being really horrible to my husband and my kids. And, you know, they're probably going to walk out on me, you know, just because I just can't, you know, love them and all that sort of stuff." People don't think, because that's not what people's motivation is. People generally, I mean, we've got some psychopaths in the world, but mostly are motivated, you know, they want good stuff. And these people probably thought they're trying to, you know, rescue the Israelites and save them from things. You know, that's their motive. But we need to be very careful about our motives and our actions, you know, that our actions are, you know, what our motives are, you know. And by the same token too, let's try and, you said, you know, try and judge other people's motives. They're not, you know, these people, you know, are not really trying to, you know, do bad things. They're trying to do the right thing. So we can be very careful about knowing what God wants, you know. We need to be strong in that too. So in 14, that night all the people of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this desert. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." How hard has change for us? You know, they were miserable in Egypt, but that was what they knew, you know. And are we, you know, do we really believe that God is going to do good things for us, or are we happy where we are? Do we want to move on? Or do we want to stay where we are because it's comfortable? You know? Then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. Joshua son of Nun and Caleb son of Jephunneh, who were among those who explored the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite assembly, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will swallow them up. The protection is gone, but their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them." So who do we listen to? The negative people in our lives, or the ones who are telling us what God wants for us? So much easier, isn't it, to believe the bad stuff? But the whole assembly talked about stoning them. Then the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting to all the Israelites. The Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe in me in spite of all the miraculous signs I have performed among them? I will strike them down with a plague and destroy them, but I will make you into a nation greater and stronger than they." Moses said to the Lord, and how easy would it be Moses for said, "Yeah, go on, come on, bring it on. I want a better people to, you know." But again, what's his motive? To build up the Israelites and to have them, you know. It's not about him, it's not about Moses. It's about God and the other people in his life. Moses said to the Lord, "Then the Egyptians will hear about it. By your power you brought these people up from among them, and they will tell the inhabitants of this land about it. They have already heard that you, O Lord, are with these people, and that you, O Lord, have been seen face to face, that your cloud stays over them, and that you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. If you put these people to death all at one time, the nations who have heard this report about you will say, 'The Lord was not able to bring these people into the land he promised them on oath, so he slaughtered them in the desert.' Now may the Lord's strength be displayed, just as you have declared. The Lord is slow to anger." Notice it doesn't say he doesn't get angry. It just says that he is slow to anger. Sometimes I think we think that means he doesn't get angry, but that's not right either. "Abounding in love and forgiving sin and rebellion. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished." So he might forgive us, but there are going to be consequences. "He punishes the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation." So what we do affects our kids and our grandkids and our great-grandkids, you know, so we need to think about that too. "In accordance with your great love, forgive the sin of these people, just as you pardon them from the time they have left Egypt until now." The Lord replied, "I have forgiven them as you asked. Nevertheless, as surely as I live and as surely as the glory of the Lord fills the whole earth, not one of the men who saw my glory and the miraculous signs I performed in Egypt and in the desert, but who disobeyed me and tested me 10 times, not one of them will ever see the land I promised on oath to their forefathers. No one who has treated me with contempt will ever see it. But because my servant Caleb has a different spirit and follows me wholeheartedly, I will bring him into the land he went into, and his descendants will inherit it. Since the Amalekites and the Canaanites are living in the valleys, turn back tomorrow and set out towards the desert along the route to the Red Sea." So in Numbers 1, it says there are 603,550 men. So that's a lot of men to die. That's how many. And they think, you know, and during that time, that 40 years too, there would have been women and children die too. So we're probably talking a million people who are dying because they didn't do what God said. That's far-reaching consequences, really. Where am I up to? 26. Yep. "The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, 'How long will this wicked community grumble against me? I have heard the complaints of these grumbling Israelites, so tell them. As surely as I live, declares the Lord, I will do these very things I heard you say. In the desert your bodies will fall, every one of you 20 years or more who was counted in the census," as I said, that's the 603,550, "who has grumbled against me. Not one of you will enter the land I swore with uplifted hands to make your home, except Caleb son of Jephunneh and Joshua son of Nun. As for your children that you said would be taken as plunder, I will bring them in to enjoy the land you have rejected. But you, your bodies will fall in this desert. Your children will be shepherds here for 40 years, suffering for your unfaithlessness, until the last of your bodies lies in the desert. For 40 years, 1 year for each of the 40 days you explored the land, you will suffer for your sins and know what it is like to have me against you. I, the Lord, have spoken, and I will surely do these things to the whole wicked community which has banded together against me. They will meet their end in this desert. Here they will die. So, too, it's interesting, too, I think there that one for each year you explored the land. That was only the 12 people who went to explore the land, but God's saying you all went. You know, so when you're a community, what you do affects everybody else because God sees us not as individuals but as a community. So the men Moses had sent to explore the land who returned and made the whole community grumble against him by spreading a bad report. These men responsible for spreading the bad report about the land were struck down and died of a plague before the Lord. Of the men who went to explore the land, only Joshua son of Nun and Caleb son of Jephunneh survived. When Moses reported all this to the Israelites, they mourned bitterly. Early the next morning, they went up towards the high hill country. "We have sinned," they said. "We will go to the place the Lord promised." But Moses said, "Why are you disobeying the Lord's command? This will not succeed. Do not go up, because the Lord is not with you. You will be defeated by your enemies, for the Amalekites and Canaanites will face you there. Because you have turned from the Lord, he will not be with you, and you will fall by the sword." Nevertheless, in their presumption, they went up towards the high hill country, though neither Moses nor the Ark of the Lord's Covenant moved from the camp. Then the Amalekites and Canaanites who lived there in that hill country came down and attacked them and beat them down all the way to Horeb. So they didn't want to go, but now they go anyway, even though God's saying don't go. So, and then I thought, why didn't they want to go in the first place? Why go now? What's their motivation? See, God loved them and wanted to give them that land. And now he's punishing them and they're prepared to go. You know, so they're more motivated by love or by fear. And is that the same with us? Do we worry about being punished or do we want to serve God out of love? You know? And you can just, so I can just, you know, Moses going, don't go. Don't go. Are you so stupid? Don't go. You know, like in the Charlie in the Chocolate Factory with Johnny Depp, when the kids are going to do the wrong thing and he goes, don't do it. Don't do it. Because he knows they're going to do it, you know, because we're so stupid, aren't we? Like, God says do this and we don't do it. So we go, he says, this is what's going to happen. So we go, okay, we'll go back here and we'll try and do this bit. But God moves on and we don't want to move on. I don't know what it is. You know, we're happy, you know. So that's right, you know. And as I said, I think we read that, you know, he's slow to anger and think, well, he's not going to be angry. But that's not what it says. It says he's slow to anger. You know, you can't keep sinning and think that it's going to be okay because it's not. And God will forgive you, and he forgave the Israelites. It says that. But there are consequences to the actions, and consequences not just for you but for your family and for your community, you know. And, you know, I was thinking, why didn't God just, you know, be done with it, kill them all 40 years and let everybody else go into the desert? But God's love, even in those punishment, because imagine if he had killed those 600,000 men, what sort of community would you have left? You know, all these widows and children who are fatherless, and how are they going to grow up? And, you know, that would have caused bitterness and resentment. They wouldn't have been able to fight those people. So, you know, even in his punishment, God is loving and just, you know, because those Israelites, you then talk to their children about what God had done and said, you know, you need to listen. Hopefully they then went, because that's what I said, they said, you know, we've sinned. So, you know, they had an awareness that they'd done the wrong thing. So hopefully then they taught their children and their grandchildren to listen to God and to do what God said, you know. You know, so the men who went into the land, and it didn't just affect them, you know, it affected their children and their grandchildren. And it's 40 years wandering the desert, a long time. And I think sometimes we think God doesn't do that sort of thing now, but I don't necessarily think that's true. You know, I think, you know, we think, you know, Henry VIII, when he split from the Catholic Church because he wanted to divorce and get remarried. And what consequences is that having today? You know, we wonder why we've got to the stage where they want gays to be able to get married. Well, hello. You know, Henry VIII, way back whenever that was, I don't know exactly, but that's, you know, that's hundreds of years ago. There's still consequences to that. If you don't deal with that, you know, and God, you know, once, two, we mark up God's first plan, that first plan doesn't exist anymore. There's another plan, and we need to make sure we've come out of this first plan and gone with the second plan or the third plan or the fourth plan or whatever. We need to make sure we're in God's will and doing what God says. You know, if God says you're going to wander the desert for 40 years, well, let's do that and rejoice in God in that. Because that God's sake, there was still, you know, there's still a good plan. They're still going to come to that promised land. It's going to be harder and longer, but you're still going to get there. You know, we need to do what God says in the first place, really. They had just gone into the land in the first place and gone, yes, God, you are great, and you can, you know, with you we can defeat these people. Well, they wouldn't have spent 40 years and whatever else comes for that, you know. And we need to be careful too that we're not trying to walk in God's plan for 100 years ago or 5 years ago or 2 years ago or 1 year ago, that we're walking in God's plan for our life now, today. You know, if God told you to do something 10 years ago and you didn't do it, well, you need to make sure that you're listening. And is God still, because he might still be saying to do that, or he might be saying, no, let's move on. I mean, when Jonah was swallowed by the whale, God didn't say, well, don't go to Nineveh. He said, go to Nineveh, you know. So it's all about listening to God and being obedient to God in whether he tells you to do something or whether he tells you not to do something. You know, and to be motivated, as I said, to be motivated out of love. You know, God loved them so much, he wanted to give them that promised land, but they didn't believe it till he started punishing them. You know, and that's a really sad thing. So, you know, let's be motivated by love. And I think, you know, we've sometimes think today, we think it's unfair that, you know, somebody else did something so I get punished. But that's what it's like. That's God's design, that we're community, and that, you know, we celebrate together and we love together, but we're all in it together, the good and the bad, the sin and the not sin. So we need to try not to sin, because it's not just me that it affects. It affects all of you guys too. And God's plan for this church is dependent on all of us doing what we're supposed to do. We're not going, oh, that's too hard to be a church of 1,000, you know, because God will go, well, I'll choose some other. You know, or it'll take another 20 years rather than the 5 years that I've decided. You know, so as individuals and as a community, we can choose the hard way or we can choose the easy way. So that's right, God's way. So let's, you know, decide that we're going to listen to God and do what he says. So, yeah. Because didn't you say we're going to have... Let's spend some time, you know, if we sing a few more songs, let's really press into God and say, God, what are you saying to us? You know, what do you want us to do as individuals and as a community? And I don't think we do. We often ask God, what do you want me? But as a community, we don't ask so much, you know. So let's really do that, to use those songs to really press into God and, you know, what are you doing? And the other thing this motivational speaker said, he said, get up, everybody. So everybody, stand up. So, yep, stand up. Stand up. Stand up. And I heard that. I heard that moan. Right, sit down again. Sit down again. Right, everybody get up. Yeah, good on you. He said, he does this at schools, and you hear the moan, and you hear the, oh, God, do I have to? And, you know, and he'd already been talking about the need to be grateful. You know, and he said he went to a school one day and he did that several times and he got the grade. We were pretty good in this stuff because we only had to do it twice. The first time we went, I went, oh, and then we went up and he went sit down and we all went, oh, we know what you're saying to us. So we all stood up and went, yeah. And he said at school, one school he went to, they didn't get it. And he went over to some kid and he said, what would you do if somebody asked you to stand up and you could stand up? And this kid didn't have any legs, you'd have to have somebody carry him into the hall, you know. So let's be grateful too, that we can stand up. Didn't you? Didn't.
Well, thanks, Rosina. Yeah, really important to focus in on what God wants us to do and to do the thing he calls us to do at the right time. Not say no and then say yes when it's too late. So I just really want to encourage you that. Do that.